My name is Lois Kamenetz, and in November of 2010, my partner and I were going to board a flight for Los Angeles to spend American Thanksgiving with a family member. This was, you know, I would have assumed was going to be a kind of effortless, you know, passage through security and through passport clearance and so on. When we arrived at the American passport check, I was told that I had to go to another room for secondary screening, and we couldn't figure out what the problem was. And actually, at the time, I just assumed it was, you know, a sort of random checking to see how the system works or whatever. Anyway, we went to this other very large room, very imposing, with frosted glass, so you really couldn't see what was happening inside. I was told that I was not able to cross over to the United States because they had information that the police had attended my home in 2006. And my initial reaction was to be really puzzled. And I thought, well, did we have a break-in? I really could not figure out what they were referring to. And I guess I looked completely puzzled. And I said to him, I said, well, I don't understand. The police attended our home? I mean, what was this about? And then he said to me, well, we have a note that you had attempted to do violence to self, others, or property. And then it sort of, well, at that point, I was still kind of really stymied. And then it dawned on me that what they might have been referring to was a suicide attempt I had made in 2006. And at that point, sort of my puzzlement was replaced by shock. I mean, I could not understand how they had what I assumed was access to my medical records. So I asked the officer from Border Security, from Homeland Security, how they had access to my medical records. And he said, well, they didn't, they can't. But they did have a notation from the Toronto Police that they had attended my home. And I needed to, in order to fly to the United States or to fly even over American airspace, I was required to have my physician submit a detailed medical report to the physician for Homeland Security here in Toronto. And at that point, I was fingerprinted, I was photographed, and I was given these forms that I had to have my physician complete. And I also had to sign a waiver stating that whatever information was then given to the physician for Homeland Security became the property of the U.S. government, and they were authorized, I was in essence authorizing them to do with that information whatever they wished, and that I had no say in any of that. In retrospect, I mean, I think that was, like, I guess I was free not to sign it, but that also would have meant that I would not have been able to fly to the U.S. And I really had no understanding of whether that was a time-limited thing or whether that would be forever and ever. I also couldn't figure out why, if this happened in 2006 and we're now at 2010, why I'd never been stopped before. I mean, this just seemed like I had an enormous number of questions. Anyway, once we got through the fingerprinting and the photographing and got all the forms and I signed the waiver, then I was basically escorted out of the airport. So that was it. And then at that point, we went home shocked and stunned and really unable to figure out at the moment how we were going to explain this to my cousin. I mean, not that, you know, she was family. It wasn't like this was a business flight that we were taking and now we had to explain it to a prospective employer or to our own employer. But still, we had not really shared this information with my cousin. And it wasn't because we necessarily withheld it. I don't know. It just was not information we shared. So, of course, we had to call her and explain that we weren't coming. So that was the first thing. And then the next thing after we did that was to contact my physician, and he was appalled. They wanted really detailed information. He had to provide information on all of my hospital admissions and hospital discharges. He had to provide information on medication I was on any communicable diseases I had, which included HIV, any other STDs, whether I had any alcohol and drug problems. I mean, at this point, you could wonder why this would have anything whatsoever to do with me boarding an airplane. But it took him and this nurse with me in phone contact, if there were questions and so on, to finally put this massive document together. And at the end of the day, I was able to run it over to the Homeland Security physician. And then I had to wait until I got all this paperwork done and sent over to Homeland Security and got the clearance. So anyway, we were able to fly out 2 days later. This business of having him assess my claim cost me $250. And if he was not satisfied that the information was sufficient, or if he had any questions and had to contact me or had to contact my physicians, I would be on the hook for $500 an hour for his time. And I believe it's an hour. I'd have to have the papers in front of me, but it was $500 for further information and so on. So that also raises the question of what happens to someone who doesn't have the financial means to be able to negotiate this, because even the initial $250, but this was just so egregious. I mean, it was an incredibly egregious breach of my privacy, of my right to travel freely. After all this, well, actually on the weekend, since I couldn't do anything, we had a pity party and we had friends come over and have sandwiches and soup. And when the dishes were all cleared away, when they were washed and cleared away, then I got busy. And I contacted the therapists I had worked with, the people at St. Mike's Hospital that I had had a therapeutic relationship with, the people at CAMH. We began the process of finding a lawyer. We wanted to ascertain whether the Toronto Police Service did in fact release this information or did enter it into CPIC, which is the criminal database, which is then, of course, shared with Homeland Security, as it should be, because it's a criminal database. Problem was that I wasn't a criminal. And so our big question then was this indeed released into CPIC? And if so, why? Because it should never have been. The Toronto Police Service kept stalling. Finally, they did release the information through Freedom of Information request, and it indeed was them that had passed this information on. But their explanation was, you know, some gobbledygook about the need to protect people and so on and so forth. But anyway, once we determined that it was indeed the Toronto Police Service, then staff at the Canadian Civil Liberties Association felt that this should go beyond this sort of small matter that we had resolved and actually be looked at as a charter challenge, because my charter rights had been violated. I've had my cross-examination. The lawyers from the RCMP were present. And it was interesting because when I had my cross-examination, I guess they sort of latched on to, well, who would know that? I mean, obviously it was me that's telling the world about this, so I'm the one who's revealing it to the world. I mean, if it was only between Homeland Security, I guess they're suggesting, if it was only between the police, Homeland Security, and me, I mean, who would know about it? But that was not at all the issue. The issue was that whether someone heard or not, there was still a really egregious breach of my right to travel freely and my right to have, in essence, what's a medical problem kept private. I mean, the call to 911 was for a medical emergency. It was not for any sort of criminal activity. But anyway, my big concern and the reason I chose to go public is that I'm no longer working. I have a professional background in education and mental health and in information management. And to me, this is the kind of thing that needs to have a public airing, because what happened to me, I know through the Canadian Civil Liberties Association and through the Psychiatric Patient Advocates Office, has happened to many other people. But many people are not willing to be public about it because they fear the embarrassment, they worry about their job security. One of the issues that they raised was that because I had attempted suicide, I was at risk of creating, I guess, havoc on the airplane or of committing a violent act. And that also speaks to a complete ignorance of the facts. And this sort of equating mental illness with violence is just, it's wrong. I think this is something that we really need to look at, because too many people are being hurt, and too many people will continue to be hurt if we allow this to go unchallenged.